Hey guys, Raphael here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you say podcast? Dudes, dudettes, you're listening to the podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network. Cowabunga!
Hello, this is episode 201 of The Cinema Geeks, and I'm one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today is the Comic Concierge, Dan. Hello.
Hello. Hello. We are nearing the end of this journey.
We are nearing the end of the ride through the sewers with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as we've covered every one of their films up to this point. Today we're getting the last of the films that were made prior to 2023, when we had the new animated movie that came out this year. So this one and one more, and then we'll be through our Turtles journey, and then maybe we'll have a special episode where we get to do some awards and some prizes or something of that effect. We'll have to decide what that's going to be. But today we're covering Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, which was a 2022 Netflix film based on the series that was produced by Nickelodeon that ran from, I believe, 2018 to 2020, somewhere in that range. So this one's directed by a guy named Andy Suriano and Ant Ward, and it is obviously based on these same characters by Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman. I just to kind of set the stage, Dan, I had never seen an episode of the Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series on Netflix. I had never seen an episode. I don't even know if I had seen much of the art or visuals or anything about this series. Like, I knew it existed, kind of, but it definitely was happening at a time where I was way too consumed with being a new parent and stuff like that. So I don't remember this existing, but it did. And then they made a movie a couple years later to kind of wrap it up or spin off of the series. So had you ever seen any of the actual Netflix series prior to seeing the movie?
I have not. No, I have not watched any of the Netflix series. I knew the movie came out. I think I had social media. I heard a lot of good things about it, and I watched like the first 15 minutes of it, and just because it's something, but I never ended up finishing it. But yeah, I never watched the cartoon series at all. So I was going into this knowing nothing beyond, you know, the other movies we've seen.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's just get right into it then. So we are basically fresh to this version of the Turtles and kind of just jumping into this movie without seeing any of the lead up to it. But I don't know how many episodes that series ran, but I'm definitely was not going to be watching all of that prior to this movie in any type of preparation. So we're going to deal with the Turtles here, and they are fighting against Krang, which is obviously a recurring character in the franchise. So we're going to have Krang as kind of the main bad guy and Krang's siblings, I guess. And then we're going to be dealing with the four turtles, April O'Neil, Splinter, Casey Jones, etc. on the good side. There's going to be time travel involved. There's going to be like mystic forces and weapons involved. And it's definitely a different feel for the turtles than anything we've experienced in this journey so far. So what was your initial reaction to Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, which is a lot to say?
Yeah, I went into this, I didn't really know really what to expect. Like, I did see some images. I knew like the Raph was really big. I remember like he was a leader of the turtles. I remember hearing that, and you know, I heard some things about it. So I was expecting it to be different. I was expecting it to be kind of, I think, geared towards like a younger audience, even like something younger than like the Turtles Forever or something like that. And I think it certainly is geared towards that audience. It's not nearly as comedic, of course, as like the 80s series, the one we grew up on, but not nearly as, I would say, a bit more cartoonish than the Turtles Forever, that universe, whatever you want to call it. So I was going in like, you know, just interested in seeing it. Like I mentioned, I heard pretty good things about it from social media, which is why I was first caught my interest. So I was going into it with different expectations. I was ready to like not understand anything that was going on, since it was a TV movie for a TV series I had not seen, but it's still Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I figured like, you know, it shouldn't be that hard to catch up with what's going on here. And I don't think it necessarily was that difficult. I didn't know about the mystical power thing. I was actually like, that seems kind of strange. And but I'm like, you know what? I like to see that explored. But then it kind of ended up like not using it in this movie, which was part of the story. So that was interesting. And you know, the voice casts were certainly different. Right away, you could tell that, you know, this was a different dynamic of the Turtles, especially with Leonardo, who basically this is Leonardo's movie. And for the most part, like he's the character that is at the central focus. It's his journey. It's him kind of becoming the Leonardo that we know. And it makes sense. It's Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I guess. So, and I was wondering mostly about the animation, like how would that look? Because it is a Netflix show, you know, Netflix, you know, who knows, like, is it going to be kind of that, you know, like heavily CGI, not CGI, but like look very, you know, dry and like uninteresting. But I thought visually it did look interesting. I thought the action scenes really were fast moving and crisp. I was not expecting like going into the future and stuff like that. But again, it's a comic. It's based upon Turtles. And I definitely liked it. I think that if I had the backstory, if this was like coming out when I was a kid, or like this was the Turtles I grew up on, probably would have liked it a lot more. But I definitely seemed to it was just weird, I guess, in a way, like just the take on it wasn't what I was necessarily expecting. It definitely felt like it didn't take a breath. It was very much like it just kept moving all the time, kept going fast and fast. And it was a little bit exhausting in that manner. But you know, it to me was a bit more like, it was a little bit like more, geared toward a younger audience than I was anticipating. Like definitely, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't necessarily like TMNT, the theatrical film. I think, you know, it held a couple more adult themes, or it felt like it more akin to the, you know, the comic book. This definitely feel like it was geared towards a younger audience, especially with this characterization, because it really hammered home like who these characters were and the development to like the 10th degree. Not necessarily bad, but again, it was definitely designed for kids. Like I don't see myself going and watching the cartoon just because it's like, it's, you know, it's not for me.
Yeah, this is interesting. Like you bring up a lot of stuff that I'm going to agree with, but I'll try to put a little bit of a spin on it, I guess. But I visually, I'm fine with it. Like that's one thing that every time you have a reboot from a established franchise, I think that's the first thing that gets like dissected ad nauseum is the visual aspect, the character design, things of that nature. Like people are just super critical of that, whether it's that they love it, they hate it. There doesn't seem to ever be any in between when something like that gets a reboot. So that's like the first thing you're going to notice as far as the artwork and the design and all that, everything visually. And I think visually it's fine. Like I wasn't too bugged by anything visual. Now it does obviously make the turtles all different sizes. So we have skinnier, bulkier, taller, shorter, you know, like they're all different, which is something we've seen a little of through this series. So that's something to get used to. The look of Splinter is definitely something that I don't know if you have to get used to it, but it's definitely something that's different that I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of, but we'll get more into that later. So visually though, it's fine as far as like how it looks. I think like you said, the action sequences, like when it's more of like a specific fight scene, work well. I don't think there's anything that's like a drawback from a visual standpoint. Voice cast is different, but I thought they were pretty good, actually. Ben Schwartz is Leonardo, Omar Miller, Raphael. I'm just naming these because we've done it in every other one. Brandon Michael Smith is Michelangelo. Josh Brenner is Donatello. Then we have Haley Joel Osment as Casey Jones. Kat Graham is April O'Neil. Eric Baza, Splinter. And then a few other people spread in. Rob Paulsen even has a minor role, as he does with most Turtle stuff, if he's not one of the main Turtles. But I thought the voice cast worked. Obviously, it's a different take on Leonardo. That was probably one of the most jarring things for me, was that Leonardo seems to be... They all have their established kind of character traits, their established representation as far as how they're presented to us. We've seen variations on it through this journey, obviously, especially with Donatello, probably the most. We've seen where sometimes he's just full-on, you know, into that geek nerd kind of stereotype. Sometimes they dialed back that a little bit. I don't know if we've seen too many where Leonardo's not like displayed like he is in this one and characterized like he is as this one. He comes across a lot more like a combination of Michelangelo and Raphael Michelangelo from more of a immaturity standpoint, or a maturity standpoint, Raphael with more of the kind of going along to his own drummer, I guess, whatever you want to call it, whereas Raphael takes more of a leadership role, obviously, in this. So the characterization of the Turtles is a little bit different, but I don't think that's necessarily going to make or break anything for me. My problem is something that you touched on with this film, and it's a trend that I've seen. I've done a lot of like research on animated stuff over the years for voice acting related things and whatnot. And there's just like this super big trend or movement, it seems, in animation, especially probably in the last, I don't know, I'd say probably decade, where it's this hyper active, like no breath, no stop, just you can't blink or you're going to miss something type of presentation. And that just isn't for me. Like, I don't know if that just means I'm super old and out of touch, which it probably does. And kids probably just like eat this up, but it just seems like, especially stuff that's geared towards the younger audiences, like there's this feeling that we just have to keep going like 1,000 miles an hour, or we're going to lose their attention and they're going to change the channel. I don't know if that's what the fear is, but it's just like, I want to be able to digest something for just a second. Like, I want to be able to catch my breath, have some story beats or some character beats that allow me to just like resonate with something, digest something, and then move on. And this movie does not give you a split second to stop. Like, everything's going 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah. I think it's what happens when you have like, this is less than 90 minutes and you have a lot of plot here. You know, you have a lot of like, you go to the future, you have Casey Jones, you have, so there's like a lot to accomplish in a short amount of time, so you're, it's always on the go, and I think it can get a little bit much at times, because it's just like, okay, let's just, you know, because nothing feels like it just feels like you have a problem and it's resolved, or something comes up, like the one scene with like Donatello, he gets into the spaceship and like he's able to control it, and like, and like, oh, this could be really cool. And it looks visually great. Like, there was that great, you know, moment of him like kind of rising up with a silhouette shot. Like, I was like, wow, this is really looks great. And but then it, like, the moment it starts, it stops because Krang takes over. So it doesn't really end up going anywhere. And it just seems like a lot of those things where like it would set something up, and then like it just kept going from beat to beat to beat. Then it went into the final climax a bit. So
right.
So, I think that was part of it. There's just like a lot of plot here. I don't know how it compares to the cartoon. Like you said, you know, we haven't watched it, so I don't know if the cartoon series is any different. But yeah, I think there are some. It does seem like when it comes to cartoons now, at having kids, there are either ones like this that are forever, like just take never stop, or ones that are just more quiet and reserved, like what is it? The Amazon show with I can't think of the name of it. It's like a stop motion animation show. It's not going to work, but then there's those TV shows, you know, the cartoons that do take their time, like, you know, something like Daniel Tiger or something like that. Again, a bit more educational, but right. I don't know, to compare that to this would be different. It's different, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Cause that was something where it's like this, I just feel old.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there is enough animation still aimed towards kids that does more so on a pace that I can keep up with. Like, even like the Netflix She-Ra, that's definitely geared towards trying to develop those characters in that franchise for a younger audience. But I don't feel like the intense, like supersonic speed, like we're just really catering to like never let them have even a second to think about changing to something else. I don't know what. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's too much for me. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's just, even with, like, the camera movement, like, it's always on the move. It's, like, every three seconds. And I will say, like, because we're recording this, and at the time we're recording this, I've seen the newest film, and I'm not going to give my thoughts on it, per se. But I will say that, like, that to me does show, like, you can still do animation and not be that, like, that, you know, hectic style. Like, you know, Michael Bay would do it a lot. You know, I think there's been, like you mentioned, like things like Cocomelon and other things like that, where they purposely do it because it just, like, you know, it's also, I don't know, but it seems like it is certainly a choice, and it can, you know, again, I'm sure we sound really old doing this, But I guess they're just trying to compete with what kids are used to, so that could also be part of it too.
Right. I just feel like sometimes this has happened like every decade that I've ever watched cartoons and things of that nature, but there's certain ways that each generation of cartoon, I feel like, tries to cater to an audience that they don't necessarily 100% know. Like, they assume that they need to do this for that audience without, like, there was a lot of dumbing down stuff in the 80s where it's, they were really acting like kids just had no brains. Like, we really have to, like, spell it out. We have to really, you know, make it super understandable and stuff like that, where it's like, you know, we're not all babies. Like, we can handle some of it. We can fill in the blanks. We don't have to see all of the lines that connect the dots. We can, you know, and each generation, I feel like, does a little bit of something like that. And I feel like at times they think that this is what they need to do for kids these days. And I don't think that's necessarily 100% true. Another thing that really kind of threw me off is something that you kind of touched on a little bit, was this whole mystical weapons thing. And it seemed like they were trying, I don't know if the people that were like behind this, whether it was the story or the direction, like really were huge into either like Dragon Ball or Doctor Strange or something of that nature, but it seemed like it was trying to like take these little bits and things that exist in other franchises and bring this in here. Like, there's I think of like at the very beginning, like that opening sequence where they kind of like do a whole, it seems to me like something straight out of Dragon Ball Z or something like that, where they just like power up and just like send a burst of energy through whatever it was that they're doing. And then there's obviously with the weapons where it's like, it's almost actually similar to what you see in Brave Star back in the 80s, where you have like the holographic extension of the character, but it more modern would compare to like Doctor Strange, where you see them doing those types of things and drawing circles with their hands of energy and all this type of stuff, which is fine in and of itself. It's not anything I've ever seen in the Turtles world, so it kind of was a bit to get used to at first, like what are we doing with these magical nunchucks and bows and katanas and size and things like that. So I'm not saying that doesn't like make or break anything for me, but it was something that definitely threw me off a little bit as far as like what's going on in this universe of the Turtles.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say like there have been so many different versions and takes on the Turtles. So I don't know if there was ever one that dealt with the mystics. I mean, like I mentioned, like the IDW series gets into reincarnation and stuff like that. So it's not completely off. I don't think so. But like I said, I was actually kind of interested in that. So like, actually, you know, if you're gonna, this is what, the fifth Turtle series, why not do something different like that? Right. But then with this part of the story was that they didn't explore that. So I was like, oh, that thing I was actually interested in seeing. And we get a little bit at the end, but yeah, I guess adding in a magical element isn't that far off for where they were. You know, I feel like we saw that, you know, talking about things like that kept copying everything else. I felt like in the 90s, everything was copying like the Power Rangers. So everyone got like a morphing thing. Like they had the Avengers cartoon and they would morph into like their different costumes and stuff like that. So I wonder if that's kind of, you know, a part of that.
I mean, everybody has stuff that they grew up liking or liked over the years that they're going to insert a little bit, whether subconscious or conscious. So I get some of that. Like we talked about, the Turtles are definitely different characterizations of the Turtles to different degrees. I mean, they're still the Turtles. They're still brothers. That really comes across. They still have, I feel like, a good mix of humor within this. Like, it still feels, you know, obviously everything we've watched has either gone a little bit more to the serious side or a little bit more to the comedic side, but it's still two kind of elements that exist in various degrees in each one of these. And I thought they handled the balance fairly well in this, as far as that goes. I am interested in your opinion on both Splinter and Casey Jones. Splinter is obviously a much, shorter, heavier, stocky rat, and it seems like he's not, I don't know, I don't get that whole master ninja vibe from him, but so he's definitely portrayed different. And Casey Jones comes across as like this very, I don't know, baby face, like, it,
whiny.
He's, yeah, but like much younger, more immature, whiny version compared to what, at least compared to what we've seen in a few of the other things that we've talked about so far in this series. So did you like Splinter Casey Jones in this? Did it dislike, or did it not really matter to you one way or the other that they changed it up a little bit?
I wasn't the hugest fan of Casey Jones. I get what they're doing there. Like, it, you know, you need someone, but it wasn't. The characterization, at least it was better than the Michael Bay movies. I would say at least he wasn't a cop, I guess, so it made more sense. But I still, like, I don't know, he didn't have that edge to him. I still think we're just not getting better than the first movie, and I guess we've got to move on from that. Splinter, I just feel like I had no opinion of him whatsoever. I didn't love the design, but he just didn't seem to have much in here. Like, he seemed very, like, it wasn't nearly a that big of a part of the movie. I felt like he wasn't, he was just kind of a, it felt like with this story, they didn't really know what to do with April or Splinter. So they just kind of put them together, and we didn't get much of either of them. So I was indifferent towards both of them, basically.
Yeah. I guess April O'Neil was a little bit of a different depiction as well. They definitely changed a lot in this series, but I don't think any of it was enough to, like, I don't know, wreck the series or something to be like super pissed off, which I'm sure there was a bunch of 80s, 90s fanboys that were, but I didn't see necessarily that. What do you think of revolving the story around Krang and how they use like the multiple Krangs? And like, are you a fan of those types of storylines within the Turtle world?
I am. Like, the whole multiple Krang thing is actually, you know, that is actually from the comics. So, like, they've had different, so that's not something that they completely changed, because they had different, you know, he had.
Right.
So that makes sense. I liked the central conflict here of Leonardo trying to be that leader and his relationship with Raphael. I think I really love this depiction of Raphael, because we're so used to him being the rebel, the guy that gets angry all the time. But here, it's flipped a bit. And yeah, he's going against the team in a way, but not necessarily. But, like, you know, he's more like his sacrifice, or, you know, what have you. Like, he's trying to do what's in best of the team. Like, he's in conflict of the team because he's trying to keep them on the straight and narrow, and they're kind of going elsewhere. So I actually really felt like that was an interesting dynamic. Like, he knows what Leonardo can be, and he's trying to, part of it scares him, part of it is him trying to make him realize who, you know, that leader. So I enjoyed. I love, like, this is a very different Leonardo. But, you know, I think giving him the opportunity to become that character is kind of a good choice, because otherwise, again, you're just telling the same story over and over again. And I felt like this series, if anything, definitely had its own identity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I cannot get 100% behind some of the dialogue that's used in this film. Like, I think the writing was a little juvenile at times, but that's coming from someone that obviously... I get it. This isn't like something they're trying to make up for an Oscar or something like that. But I don't know. Just some of the writing just seemed like, at one point, I think Krang or somebody says, "Retrieve our ship, the Technodrome." Like, that's not how you would talk to your other, like, henchmen. You would just say, like, "Retrieve our ship," or "Go get the Technodrome." Like, you wouldn't be like, "Retrieve our ship," and then, like, look at the camera and say, "Hey guys, our ship is called the Technodrome." Yeah. Just so you know. Like, it just seemed like it was very forced. And there's just different things in there. They did try to have a little bit of a nod to Eastman and Laird. They have a university called East Laird University, which, to me, why wouldn't you call it Lairdman University? I think Lairdman is way better than East Laird. It just sounds weird to me. But they did make the little nod to the creator, so you gotta like that. Was there anything as far as things that we haven't had to talk about that you either liked or disliked about the film in general?
No, I think... Like I said, I definitely think if I went into this watching the series, I probably would have enjoyed it more than I did, maybe. But I think one thing that hammers home is that, like, it just shows how versatile the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are, because they have that formula that we're used to. But I do like seeing it switched up a bit. Like, I think it's a good way of, like, keeping this, you know, this franchise fresh every time, where it's just like, let's try something a little bit different. And I thought it was successful in that. So, like, you know, it's not something where, you know, it's not going to make me rush out and want to watch the cartoon from beginning to end, but, you know, I at least did not regret watching this compared to some of the other stuff we've watched so far.
Yeah, I didn't mind the characterization of the turtles. I thought it made an interesting takes on each turtle and kind of something fun to kind of see in a different light. You know, if you just give us the same exact Leonardo, Donatello, etc. every single time, that becomes a little bit boring. So I like what they were trying to do with that. I think visually, like the look of it, the choreography of some of the action sequences, that works for me. The voice cast works for me. So it does have quite a few positives. I don't think I'm a huge fan of the way that they portrayed the mystical powers of the turtles, but overall, I think the main drawback for me was just the rapid fire, like non-relentless, you know, it was just like, I just can't deal with that, I guess, in an animated thing, because I'm old and I'm going to stand on my yard and yell at the young whippersnappers for liking something like this. Overall, it got a really good reception, 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mostly positive reviews from all the critics I looked at. Got nominated for a couple different awards, including Achievement for Character Design and an Animated Feature Production and things of that nature. So overall, it was received very well. I just, like I said, it's just not for me. It's not my turtles. I think it works probably for a different generation that's used to this type of depiction when it comes to their animation. I just sometimes wonder if it's necessary to go that route. I just feel like it, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know how it all works, but like, I feel like we already have a lot of kids that struggle with attention disorders and things of that nature. And I don't know if doing something like this helps them, or doing as far as digest something, or if it just adds to the fact that that's what they want, is the nonstop relentless things. But like I said, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm talking out of my ass right now. So any closing thoughts on Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie? That's the last time I'm going to say that.
No, like I said, I went in with limited expectations and by enjoying myself. Like I said, it doesn't overstay its welcome, which I think we've seen with other films. Compared, even though there is a lot of plot here, it doesn't get caught up with it. It kind of just, the benefit of it, you know, that endless pace is that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't get like convoluted, even though like it could easily be, because it's just like, let's move from one thing to the next, keep it going. And so I thought that was successful. It's middle of the road for me. Like, it's one of those movies where it's hard because it's just like, it's kind of just that happened. It was maybe a bit disposable, was what I would say, because it was a little light. And, you know, but I think it certainly is successful at, you know, attracting the audience it's going for, which I definitely think is, you know, not us, which is perfectly fun.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be like putting this in anytime soon to rewatch it. No. And maybe not even in my lifetime, but not to say I wouldn't check out the series at some point to see kind of what else happened before this and see how they did Shredder. I'm sure he's in there somewhere and stuff like that. So it didn't turn me off the whole thing, but it's just not something that I'll probably watch again. So that does it for the movies that have been released prior to 2023. That means we only have one left to cover, and that is The Mutant Mayhem from this year, which Dan has already seen. I'll be hopefully seeing soon. That way we can get you guys an episode covering the newest theatrical release of The Turtles. And then, like I said, we'll probably close with some sort of awards or summary of our little spotlight through the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle franchise. So that should be fun. We'll be discussing some things offline, I'm sure, for that. So Dan, if people want to keep in touch with you and hear more of your thoughts on comics and different things like that, how do they do that?
You search Comic Concierge. You can find me pretty much everywhere there. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, all that stuff.
Yeah, and if you want to keep in touch with me, most of my stuff right now is happening through the Geek Showcase. A little behind, I need to produce another video here soon, so keep an eye out for that. But if you like cartoons, things of that nature, go check out that channel and let me know what you think. So also, you can stay in touch with all things GeekCast related, everything that Steve and Mike do and the rest of the channel does. You can search GeekCast Radio Network either on Google, or you can search out their different Twitter and Facebook handles. I guess it's called X now. I'm going to keep calling it Twitter by mistake. And you can keep up to date with all of that type of stuff as well. So that does it for this episode of The Cinema Geeks. Tune in next time as we cover the final chapter in our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.